I read it from a reputable green team site. This is from the CelticsBlog.com, right, Murray?
Correct.
Okay. Bobby Manning wrote this the other day, and it was just a survey of the players that came out of the third lottery position. Not the third pick, but the teams that started with the third lottery position and what happened. He said,
This is Cousin Anthony. Welcome to the Bobcast.
I'm going to bomb this.
So that's where I got it from, Dave, just by the way.
Financial Aid Office is the most, like, ridiculous penny-pinching douchebag association ever. Like, they have so much money, and they're always just like, look, man, we just don't have it. Like, yeah, you fucking do. Like, what are you talking about? Like, it's hilarious that it's, like, a school, and they just act like the most, like, loan shark shit you've ever seen in your life. Like, I don't know. Like, we just don't have it right now.
They got coaches leaving like crazy at the school. Can you believe it?
Are you talking about the track thing?
The track coach left, and then the softball coach left.
Dude, the track one is ridiculous because that's just mad unprofessional. Because it started with Justin, right? Justin Knight?
Yeah.
Dude, so when he was leaving, the coach was like still with the team, and then Justin was like, nah, I want the coach to go with me. So like unannounced, the coach just decided, and the players had to like hear through the grapevine like that was happening. But like the coach didn't announce it at all until he was just randomly like, hey guys, like I'm fucking leaving.
It was really like if Boeheim after 2003 decided to go to coach the Nuggets just because he was never going to get anything better than Melo.
Like I saw that shit and was just like, dude, get the fuck out of here. I have a couple friends on the track team that were just like, yeah, my coach just left. Like, and the season is, like, about to start in, like, a couple weeks. And I was like, oh, my God. I didn't know the softball one, though.
Yeah, he left, too. He went to some other school in Florida.
Similar circumstances, or was it,
no,
like,
not really. But it's just weird to see a couple of the coaches of scholarship programs leaving at the same time.
Yeah. That's a phenomenon that I think is ridiculous. How they, like, how, and I don't know how true it is for track and softball coaches. They always come and recruit players, and they'll, like, I think it's more for basketball and football, but they'll, like, go to their house, they'll talk to their parents, they'll be like, yeah, this is the place for your kid to be because I'm going to be there for him, and we're, like, a family, and we stick together. And then, like, as soon as there's, like, a better opportunity, the coach is like, all right, y'all, I'm out of here.
It's a real slow time of the year, but here on the Bobcast, we talk to Lindo Zay. On Tuesdays, it's Wednesday. This will be dropping on Thursday. It's a very slow time as we hit August now, but we can grind some stuff up from the ground, dig a little deeper. We're not quite at the bottom of the pile yet. I want to talk to you about the 3D guns, Lindo. That's a big controversy right now. People are just producing guns. I don't really know too much about 3D printing, do you?
I don't, but I'm all for it, baby.
You are?
Oh, yeah, let's go. I found it strange the first time that I heard about it that it, like, was real. Because the 3D printing, I've only seen it, like, one time maybe in person. And so it was like they did, like, a little, like, pot or some pottery shit. So when someone said, like, you could do it with a gun, I was, like, shocked. And I had to actually look up a video. And, like, sure enough, you can, like, really do it. So, yeah, no, I think they just have, like, a temporary restriction on it right now. But, no, that is some really strange development in technology, in technological advances in this country. People are like, oh, shit, they're trying to take away our guns. All right, we're going to just make them ourselves.
It sounds like a cartoon or something. I can't imagine how this printer just makes anything, and nevertheless a gun. Aren't guns, like, metal things that require like some blacksmithing or something?
you can 3D print a house.
That's
like
insane.
This 3D printing shit is like absurd. You can actually like make a house. So
what's stopping someone from, and I don't really want to play this side of the argument, but if they did ban these things, you could still make them feasibly.
That's
right?
What I'm saying, baby. That's why we need. No, I don't know. I don't know what materials that you use to create it. But there's nothing specifically that's going to make someone say, like, oh, shit, they just said I can't do it. Like, all right, I guess I won't make this 3D gun like that I have all the materials for right now.
That would be an interesting thing to enforce, because if you have your hands on the printer, maybe the printer's way too expensive for any normal person to retain. That might be something that factors in here.
I don't think so. I feel like it's not, you know, cheap, but it's not like outrageously like unaffordable. Like, I feel like you could, let me see. I'm sure it's like in the thousands. Like, someone could feasibly like purchase that and like get a return on investment depending on what they were like creating.
Nevertheless, it does seem like that's way more expensive to do than just buying a gun outright.
Well, how many could you make? Like, what if you could just what if you're like mass producing 3D print? Oh, I'm lying. This 3D printer says 125K.
Oh, there we go. All right, so there's the dilemma solved. So you know what it probably is? You probably have to go somewhere like the Syracuse Library to do something like that, and you probably just can't walk into the Syracuse Library and start manufacturing a gun.
It's like, hey, I'm going to try and be as quiet as I can. I'm just making a couple 38s.
Did you see the Mets lost 25-4 last night?
What sport is that? Can you tell me which sport they were playing?
This is insane. Your brothers are down the street there from Yankee Stadium. Started the season as the second best team in baseball. The Red Sox are still up there at the top, but I remember back in April, I was going back and forth with some of my Mets buddies out there at Syracuse, saying that it's going to be Mets, Red Sox this year, rematch of 86, and it is so far from that now.
What would be a Mets season if every person wasn't injured?
Jose Reyes pitched in this game.
I did not. I'm kind of upset that I missed that.
Here's the funny thing. So Jose Reyes said to a reporter at the beginning of the month that he wanted to pitch before he retires. I guess it's going to be his last season. And so the opportunity came last night when they were down by 15 or 16, whatever it was. Jose Reyes came out of the game with a 54 ERA. That's not the best part. He came into that month of July saying that he could pitch 90 miles an hour. And when he entered the game, threw one right down the plate, but it actually hit Ryan Zimmerman at 54 miles an hour. And Zimmerman faked a charge at the mound and then walked to first base. So he didn't quite reach. He didn't quite reach 90.
54, and that was a fastball.
Yeah, or it registered as a changeup.
Oh my god, dude, the amazing Mets. No, that actually is hilarious. I think it's even funnier that Jose Reyes is still on the team, because when I went to a Mets game, I think like a year and a half ago, or like a little bit less. Like a year and some change ago, they were having like rampant protests against him on the team. So for him
he did some
like,
stuff, right?
For him to, what did he do? Like throw his wife into like a sliding door or something like that.
Yeah.
So for him to like, for him to not only be on the team, but for him to be like, I think I can pitch at 90 miles an hour, and they're like, okay, well, we've seen you play baseball for a decade, but you can't. But okay, we'll let you go in. And just throw the table. I'm loving it.
This guy, I guess he was an MVP candidate in a couple different seasons, but he was really someone who had one or two years where if you said that was going to be their whole career, they're one of the best players ever. But it was just those one or two years where they were that good. And then
that was a different
going
decade.
Yeah.
That was definitely in the 08, 09-ish kind of years.
He was an all-star in 06, 07, 2010, and 2011. Seventh in MVP voting in 2006. And he had a 337 season in 11. And then from there, he went to Miami. Oh, remember that Miami team? That was supposed to be like the next great thing. It was Jose Reyes, Burley. Who else was on
that team? Oh, yes.
They were on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yes.
That's incredible. I totally forgot that team. Like, everybody remembers the Dwight Howard Lakers because they were on the cover and they were just a crapshoot that whole year.
Yeah.
I don't even
remember. The worst super team ever. Well, it's between them, and I feel like people forgot the Houston Rockets, like, tried a very past their prime super team. Like, I feel like people forget that Hakeem Charles Barkley and Scottie Pippen were like on a team together.
Yeah, and that's what people use as the argument against the ring chasers now, because they say Barkley chased one too with a big three there.
Yeah, that was like the retirement home three at that point.
That they called it Marlon Sanity, and they had Reyes on the cover with his coach, and that would be, what was that coach's name? He got in some trouble for complimenting Fidel Castro. Ozzie Guillen.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the one. Oh, no, I was thinking Dolphin. The one who was on the video. But, yeah, no. You're thinking Ozzie Guillen.
Oh, that guy appreciated Fidel Castro's efforts, too.
Absolutely.
Who else is on that team? What year was this?
I'm trying to think, because you literally just reminded me just now. Like, I completely, like, forgot about that.
It just popped into my head, too.
I don't really trust anybody. And as much as I watch, like, sports commentary, I don't listen to anybody before season starts saying how great anything is going to be. Because you can never predict chemistry issues within the team. You can never predict the injuries that can occur. You can never predict, like, oh, what, you know, personal issues are going to go on within, like, a player or their struggles on the court. Like, I hate any time I see it. The only time I, like, was like, wow, that's crazy, is Sports Illustrated predicted the Astros, like, a season later, were going to be, like, a great team, and that actually worked out. But I hate whenever someone's like, no, they're absolutely going to do this year. Like, every analyst is trying to say the Lakers are, like, now the second-best team in the West. And I'm like, dude, calm down. Like, I don't like hearing anybody try and predict, like, those just random assertions.
Here we go. All right, this cover was from 2012. The other stories on the cover were quarterback scramble, Andrew Luck, RG3, and oh yeah, Peyton, and then Kyrie Irving, Cleveland's new chosen one. So none of these stories on the cover of that article stood the test of time.
RG3, baby. Yo, second string. He might come out there. Is Joe Flacco elite, Bobby?
No.
He's not?
Although, I guess he's going to start catching passes this year from Jackson. That's going to be, like, their secret weapon. Here's the thing
third,
about the Ravens.
I mean, he's listed third string. He's listed third.
The Ravens always are the biggest threat to the Patriots. They always play the Patriots harder than anybody, but they can't get out of their own way. So if they sneak into the playoffs as a sixth seed or something, you're like, ooh, I wonder if they run to New England, what's going to happen? But every single year, they just slide right down the seventh because they can't beat the Browns or something. It's just routine for them.
I feel like no matter who shifts in and out of their team, like, their defense stays excellent, like, every year. So that's the only thing that's going for them because, you know, like, Joe Flacco has certainly lived off of that one postseason where he was, like, spectacular, and then just been kind of really middle of the pack, like, the rest of the time.
That C.J. Mosley guy, I believe that's his name, slid in pretty good for Ray Lewis once he retired, so you're right about that. They've maintained so well.
I don't know who their defensive coordinator is, but that guy's, you know, like, actually giving, like, output every single season.
So
like,
here's the super team that the Marlins assembled. It was John Bucket, catcher. Remember him?
Yes.
Carlos Lee at first base. Omar Infante at second. Reyes at shortstop. Huge addition. Hanley at third. Logan Morrison in left field. That guy had a big mouth. And then center field, Emilio Bonifacio. That guy had a little bit of hype back in his day. And then Stanton in right field.
That was how old was that Stanton? That was rookie season, or was that, like...
He was 22.
Wow.
And then your pitching staff, Burley, Nolasco. Burley. Remember Josh Johnson?
No.
Carlos Zambrano.
I remember Zambrano.
Anibal Sanchez. This team, on paper, looks awesome, but where'd they go? 68-94.
Carlos Lee, the Cub, right?
Yep.
Let's go.
That team was incredible. They got middle schoolers so excited, too. That was the year I graduated from middle school. So the spring of that year, everybody wanted those Marlins hats after they changed from the Florida Marlins to the Miami Marlins, and they got like the orange, yellow, blue logo.
They went to like the Floridian colors, right? Like
yeah.
They got
the new stadium, which is, has sat empty for 5 years, 6 years.
But have no fear, because they have a lot of new leadership in that front office via New York.
It's only gotten worse since. That was like the height of the Miami Marlins era that year, even though they won 68 games.
Yeah, via New York, the Marlins are looking on the up right now, via their press conferences as well. I really like that. I really like how Derek Jeter went and explained how like selling Giancarlo Stanton was going to be like great for the team. Like letting him go was going to be amazing.
For like a second baseman, Starlin Castro, that's pretty much all they got, right?
Mm-hmm.
How are you liking Stanton in New York?
You know, my dad and I were not happy in the beginning, as I bet, you know, a lot of people weren't. He's starting to really shape up to me out there, but it like the rest of the team, if you look at it, it's really strange for the Yankees to be in the position that they're in, because they don't have, you know, any really outstanding hitting besides, you know, a little bit of Stanton and Judge, who's injured right now. They're a lot of people batting in like the 200s with like not a ton of home runs, a couple of them. They were looking crazy in the beginning with like Didi, Judge, Stanton, now Sanchez, and now it's just like looking very middle of the pack. I don't know.
How did Stanton's numbers,
they're scaring me.
How'd he go down playing in Miami's park to going to Yankee Stadium? I mean, his slugging's down 130 points. He's going to hit probably like 30, 35 homers after hitting 60 last year. I don't understand that.
And it's kind of weird, too, just because Yankee Stadium is like a good park for hitters. I think it's just the adjustment of playing and having actual responsibilities. Like, people actually care how good you are. Whereas in Miami, it's like, let's go. Like, we got Stanton. Like,
the
you can
David
just
Price
flourish.
Effect.
Yeah, literally, it's like a Victor Oladipo kind of thing. How he can flourish in Indiana, amazing. But in like OKC, you know, you're kind of restricted, and people kind of look at you differently. You have more expectations going on. I don't know. I feel like next season we'll really put it together. But this season, can't wait to make it out of the wild card.
That's some serious disrespect for Indiana, though. Those people care.
My bad. Indiana, which is Indiana's like, what is the greatest achievement in the last like two decades of their team? The Reggie Miller choke incident.
Reggie
like,
Miller.
Is that the
you had Paul George
of their? Oh yeah, when they took the Heat to seven games, like what an achievement!
That's
going to go down in history. Yeah, at the time, it was crazy. The Lance Stevenson incident and everything. But in reality, that's like the Derrick Rose game-winning three-pointer to go up 2-1 in the series. Like, all right, we'll remember that shot. And then, like, also remember they lost that series, like, clearly.
That was sad only because Roy Hibbert went from being a perennial X-factor in the NBA Finals equation each year to being completely...
To the worst efficiency, I think, ever. I think he had the lowest efficiency in the playoffs of all time.
He fairly quickly became a player incapable of playing basketball. And I'm interested to hear that story in a few years, how he just completely fell off the face of the earth. Remember
the Roy Hibbert story?
Remember him and Paul George were getting into it? They had, like, serious beef on the same team?
Yes. I also remember when he joined the Lakers and was awful.
I've been talking about the Lakers for days and all the missteps that they've had leading up to LeBron, and Roy Hibbert's addition didn't even cross my mind. What an awful move.
You know, it's horrible. He's really up. He just didn't get paid like Luol Deng, but he's up there with like the Luol Deng saga that's like going on. Like, he's really didn't deserve to be playing at all. And that team sucked. So, like, think about how this guy who is like one of the faces of a team almost taking down, you know, LeBron's Heat is now a guy who's like not even getting minutes on the like trash Lakers, like the post like serious Kobe era Lakers.
Someone on the site BallerAlert.com claimed that George has been romantically involved with Hibbert's fiance. That was the controversy from 2014.
Yes. Yeah. And that broke up like the team, like that destroyed the band.
Hibbert has struggled the most thus far, averaging 4 points, 3 rebounds, and a block in just 21 minutes in game one of Indiana's Eastern Conference semifinals series opposite the Washington Wizards on Monday night. The big man had his worst performance to date, logging no points or rebounds in a 102-96 loss. According to ESPN, teammates Rasul Butler and David West pulled Hibbert aside after the game in an effort to motivate him and get him more involved in the team's playoff run. 0 points, 0 rebounds?
Dude, it was the worst efficiency. Like, him going out on the court was, like, worse than not having someone on the court.
How much
he was doing nothing.
How much blame does George deserve for Indiana's demise in that sense, then, if those reports were true?
I mean, it's definitely a chemistry issue, but that doesn't make a 7-foot center who's Georgetown trained get 0 rebounds in a playoff game. Like,
how about that, though? If we're talking Syracuse, Georgetown, a lot of people like to crap on the Syracuse players for their NBA careers. How about Jeff Green coming out of Georgetown to be one of the most inconsistent players of all time? Roy Hibbert, Greg Monroe, who's not even on a team right now.
But Greg Monroe's like an all right free agent pickup for wherever he goes. If he gets picked up,
it's kind I don't of, know. If you're still a free agent on August 1st, it's not looking great.
Well, Clint Capella was a free agent just a few days ago before he cashed out.
Not August 1st.
Also, I think that's crazy that somehow that board managed to keep him under 20 a season. I'm sure it's backloaded, but how did they work out 5 years, 90 on a guy who I could have sworn was talking about getting a max? At least that's what reports were saying.
Yeah, that's what restricted free agency will do to you. You just have to sit there and wait forever.
Literally, like a 5-year 90, and I really thought he was going to get like 30-something a season. Even though I think he's like the most overrated center in the league, still he was asking for the money, and he had like the recent performances in like on hand for people to be like, oh no, he should get it, he should get it.
Hibbert last played a game in 2016-17, splitting time between Charlotte and Denver. 2014, he was an all-star before that postseason started, averaging 10-6-2. And then in the playoffs, let's pull up this game log. Oh, how about this? So he went from 0 points, 0 rebounds in 17 minutes to 28-9 the night after. So the pep talk worked.
The PEDs worked. whatever they shot him up with while holding him in restraint after the game.
Wow, he went at Miami, too, so that wasn't his downfall that year, I guess, even though it was the beginning of the end.
Yeah, no, that wasn't on him at all for scoring 0 points in a playoff game.
He had 0 points again in game two against Miami.
Yeah, no, that's not on him at
all. Game four, I read that wrong.
External, they turned off the fans in the stadium. That's what happened in the arena. That's what happened.
We talk to Lindo Zay on the Bobcast every Tuesday. We will again next week. Peace out, everybody.
See you later.
So that's where I got it from, Dave.
Bobcast.